Talk Central is brought to you by TomTom Africa, a leading international enabler of accurate location-based platforms throughout Africa, offering innovative, comprehensive, and high-quality digital maps to businesses and governments. For more information, visit tomtom.co.za/geospatial.
I'm Richard van der Berg.
I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 125, for the weekend starting 17 March 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like poked blind by a hairy tokoloshi.
No hairy tokoloshes on Tech Central, or tokoloshes of any kind for that matter. On Talk Central this week, we talk about ETV's lawsuit against Communications Minister Faith Matambi and the minister's furious reaction.
Also this week, a perfect storm of problems hits Altron and Altec, and price hikes from MTN, Vodacom and Telkom.
There's also Cell C's 8 billion rand LTE plan, but before we get to that, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. Hi, Rafat.
How's it, Duncan?
Good to see you. It's been a while since we last sat around the table and recorded a show.
Yeah, I've been missing it. It's been a busy month, but it's good to be back in the saddle, so to speak.
Indeed. First batch of holidays this time of the year out of the way, Easter and all the rest of it. But the next batch about to arrive in the next week or two.
It's not helping much for productivity, that's for sure.
No, not at all. Not at all. But let's get into the show, because there's been a lot happening over the last, just over the last week, actually. Yeah. And let's talk about ETV first, because that's a big story. ETV announcing that, perhaps not surprisingly, that it's going to take Faith Matambi, the Communications Minister's final broadcast digital migration policy, to court to challenge what they're describing as aspects of it. Of course, ETV very unhappy with the final policy from government, which rejects the idea of the use of encryption or conditional access in the set-top boxes that government intends to provide free of charge to 5 million households. ETV has been lobbying hard behind the scenes for a long time for encryption, and in fact it looked like it was going its way under the former communications minister, Yunus Karim, but Faith Matambi has come in and overturned all of that, and we're moving ahead now with no encryption in the no conditional access system in the set-top boxes, which effectively means we're not going to have encryption in free-to-air television in South Africa. The signal in effect won't be encrypted unless ETV decides it wants to go to the expense of putting set-top boxes of its own in the market and encrypting that signal, which seems unlikely.
Yeah, it's probably the only way. It's fighting this because it needs to get access to those movie rights and those
that's what
sports
it says.
Rights. Yeah.
That's what it says. It claims that the signal has to be encrypted for it to get access to that latest content, and without that, it can't effectively compete with DSTV, which is becoming increasingly dominant. It is dominant in the pay TV market. I mean, that raises a number of questions. First of all, is it the role of free-to-air operators to compete with pay-TV operators?
Exactly.
I'm not sure it is.
No, I agree with you.
I'm not sure that ETV is advancing a valid argument even on that score. But, you know, they insist that this is necessary, even though there is actually an encryption system built into the set-top boxes that prevents the that encrypts the signal that leaves the set-top box and goes into the consumer's TV. That bit of the signal isn't sure. unencrypted. Sure, the signal is unencrypted, so I suppose it could be intercepted. But they use HDCP or high demand copyright protection. I forget what it stands
for. Something that's used in most decoders, isn't it?
It's exactly. Yeah. It's actually the encryption. A copy protection technology that's built into HDMI.
Yeah, so you can't drip from the HDMI or the RCA cable.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's a fundamental cornerstone of the HDMI standard.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's built into the SANS 862 South African Bureau of Standards specification for set-top boxes in South Africa. So they all have HDCP based on HDMI built into the HDMI port on these boxes. Now, if you listen to MultiChoice, they'll say that's all that's actually needed. And if you look at what what BBC did in the UK. The BBC launched services completely unencrypted, but launched those only standard definition broadcasts. Then when they wanted to move to HD, they needed to implement an encryption system of some time, and they considered a number of options. One of them was encrypting the signal, but Ofcom rejected that idea, Ofcom being the British regulator. Yeah, yeah. And see, I've been doing a lot of research on this subject last weeks, but Ofcom rejected that idea, and the BBC simply implemented HDCP, along with something called Huffman codes, which isn't in itself encryption, but it's also a protection mechanism that can be implemented without encrypting the actual signal that's broadcast.
Mm.
Now, MultiChoice is putting forward the argument that that's all that's needed, and that actually, you know, if the BBC can get the best content through this mechanism, why can't ETV do the same? ETV is arguing, actually, no, we have to encrypt the system, encrypt the signal, rather than just provide an encryption mechanism on the output of the video output for the HD signal on the box. So that's where we stand in the argument at the moment. But ETV has now taken the matter to court. They're challenging it on a number of legal arguments. And then this morning, my colleague Sunil Gopal had a chat with Faith Mutambi on the sidelines of a conference organized by SADIBA, the Southern African Digital Broadcasting Association. She hit back quite strongly, in fact, saying, and I'm going to quote, because I'm just going to bring up the article here on my iPad. She says, South Africa won't be held to ransom by ETV. We won't be held to ransom by commercial interests. We are here to serve the interests of the people, she warned in that interview that she had with Tech Central this morning. So interesting remarks, and certainly it shows that it suggests that the government's not going to back down in the face of this ETV lawsuit, and I don't think it should, actually.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, let's be honest, if this does happen, it is going to create a lot more headaches, I'm sure, for the system than the current process that they're doing. And also, You can also argue the fact that it's not really correct for ETV to get a free ride potentially on a new deployment like this, where MultiChoice has spent billions to set up that infrastructure. But that's just playing devil's advocate.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I've said that before, and in pieces I've written on Tech Central and in the Sunday Times, I think that people tend to hate MultiChoice because it's been so successful, but it's been successful for a reason, and I think that to punish the company by implementing a taxpayer-funded subsidy of competitors is not fair. If they want to roll out encryption in set-top boxes, then they should pay for it.
Mm, yeah, definitely. But let's hope that the rollout of at least the digital or these set-top boxes will pave the way for more players to at least take up the digital signal, so we'll get a broader spectrum of broadcasters to begin with, and then worry about the Hollywood movies, and the sports rights and that kind of thing.
Exactly. And let's just remember, I mean, the BBC is probably a bad example to compare to, because they receive a huge amount of money in license fees. You know, the average Brit pays a lot of money in license fees. I forget the exact amount, but it's something like £200 a year.
Sure.
So about, what, close on 4,000 rand a year just in mandatory TV license fees if you own a TV set in the UK. So that's expensive. And there's a lot of revenue they get through that, in that regard. And the BBC's quality of programming is outstanding. But generally around the world, free-to-air television is not that good quality. I mean, if you look at free-to-air television in the US, it's awful. It's 50% of its advertising. Yeah, you don't want to watch it. Free-to-air elsewhere in the world is generally appalling.
Yeah.
It's not a platform that is typically competed with pay TV, and I think if pay TV operators, if broadcasters want to compete with DSTV, they should do it on the basis of being paid broadcasters.
Yeah, I agree.
Pay is the mechanism whereby the best content is seeded into the market, and then for free to air television tends to get it a few years later.
And also, with ETV already, if they need to expand, I think there's a lot more for them to do firstly before, they just piggyback off this digital signal to try and get access to these licenses potentially.
Mm.
I think they need to flesh out their, maybe they're thinking a bit more. There's always the internet. I don't know. I'm not an expert in that field, but I do think it was, I don't agree with the way that they taking this on.
Anyway, it's let's keep an eye on the space. I wonder how this one is going to pan out. But I think there's a very real risk here that that this ETV lawsuit could hold back the whole digital migration process even further.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. Very interesting profit warning and strategic update that was published on the JSE Sens news service late last night by Altron, which is the technology group that owns companies like Bytes, Altec, and PowerTech. It's the group, the company is controlled by the Fenta family, a company started by Bill Fenta and is now run by CEO Robbie Fenta. And of course, Craig Fenta runs the Altron TMT businesses, which includes Altec and Bytes. Those were put together in the last year and a half or so. That business, the Altec business, was delisted. I think it was about 12 months ago now, perhaps 18 months ago.
Yeah.
And so everything is via the single listed entity now, and that's Altron. And they put out a trading statement yesterday, along with a strategic update, as I mentioned, which suggests that the company has really been hit. And the headline we used on the story was "A Perfect Storm Hits Altron." And it really does read as if, with the exception of the Bytes business, the IT businesses within Altron stable, that things have really gone a bit pear-shaped in the last 12 months. They've been under tough trading conditions as it is, and the PowerTech division, which I think really feels the impact of the weak economy and the power cuts and all the rest of it. The traditional sort of they do transformers and sort of cabling stuff, and when the building industry, the construction industry, feels a downturn, I think that business takes a lot of pain. But the traditional Altec business is also coming under a lot of pressure. There are a number of reasons they have outlined for that. There's been reduced demand for set-top boxes from its Altec UEC business down in Durban, and I think that may be a direct result of a reduced order intake from MultiChoice. We saw MultiChoice move its hand the contract for the construction, or the manufacture rather, of its Explorer PVR to Pace, which has established a factory down in East London. That business historically would have gone to Altec UEC. Then we saw the launch last year of the node, the Altec node. Mm-hmm. We wrote about it quite extensively on Tech Central and had some exclusive insights into the background of that development of that product. Unfortunately, it has not performed to expectations. I'm not surprised, to be honest. I think that... I don't think it's been marketed sufficiently. Mm. I don't know about you, but they've run a campaign on Tech Central. They've run a couple of campaigns here and there, but nothing of any massive consequence. You don't see them on billboards and that sort of thing around town.
I saw a display in Dion White, I think it was.
Did you? Okay. They're here and there, but it's not in your face, the sort of in your face advertising that you might expect for a consumer product like this.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger problem the node had or has is it's very good, but it's difficult to use. It was designed by engineers for engineers. It wasn't designed for consumer use, I think. I think that's its biggest failing, having used the product quite extensively. I think you have to be very technically minded to use one of these products.
But that should just be a user interface solution, really.
It is. The user interface is not user-friendly enough. It certainly wasn't when it came to market. I haven't used it in the last few months, so maybe there have been some big improvements. But certainly it needed a lot to be a lot more user-friendly. You could do a lot with this box. I mean, you could hook up cameras, motion sensors, all sorts of other things to it's Zigbee compliant. You could do all sorts of cool stuff with it. But it required a bit of technical nous to get it right and to figure out what you were doing. I think your average consumer just wants to sit on the couch and pick up a remote control and press some buttons.
Make it work.
So I think if you wanted to do that stuff and you weren't technically minded, you had to get an expert in to come and wire it up and do all the stuff that you wanted to do. I think brilliantly executed from an engineering perspective, but from a user friendliness and just a general consumer perspective, it needed a lot more work.
Let's have to improve it. I guess it's still early days in many respects.
Sure.
for these kind of set-top boxes.
Well, what's interesting is they've now said in the statement that they issued last night that they said the node has performed below expectations with regard to retail consumer take-up. Altron TMT is now well advanced in terms of exploring alternative opportunities for this business. What does that mean? I mean, does it mean that when I first read that, I thought, oh, they're going to sell it to someone else? But perhaps they're looking for technical partners to come on board, or commercial partners to come on board, Perhaps someone to offer over-the-top services on this box. I don't know.
Yeah, perhaps a few well-placed collaborations is the key. Yeah, maybe that's what they're thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe an over-the-top player to provide services on it. I don't know. But tough times at Ultron. They also mentioned that there had been tough trading conditions at Autopage, which is their the independent cellular service provider. They were expecting an upturn in the second half of their financial year, which ended on the 28th of February, but they said this didn't materialize. So one wonders if that business is going to go the same route as Nashua Mobile at some point. Last year we saw Nashua Mobile close up shop effectively and sell its subscriber base to the respective operators that it represented. I think there were about 1 million customers that got moved across. I think Autopage is also sitting on about 1 million or just over 1 million customers. Could the company do the same? I think it's probably a distinct possibility if the business is considering a new strategic direction, which it says it is. In fact, what they say is they, I'm just reading here from our piece, is now promising a new strategic direction which will result in shedding operations identified as not core and exploring equity and technology partnerships with global industry players in other areas of the business. And what was interesting to me is they said particular emphasis will be placed on significantly reducing central costs by creating a leaner management structure. I wonder if that is kind of two centers of power at Ultron. We've got the group headed up by Robbie Fenton. We've got the Ultron TMT business, which is the significant chunk of the business headed up by his brother Craig Fenter. I wonder if this means that one of the Fenters is going to move out of the business as a result of this. I mean, that's a very strong statement that they made in the statement. And I mean, there have been rumors for years that Robbie Fenter has been keen to emigrate. I don't know what the current situation is, but certainly a few years ago his family were living overseas, and he was commuting a lot out of the country and back again, so it can't be a pleasant situation. I don't know if that's still the case, but if it is, who knows, and I'm speculating here, but maybe a restructuring of the business would see the exit of Robbie Fenter and Craig Fenter taking over the whole business. Who knows?
Seems plausible.
But the results are coming out on the 13th of May, so we'll definitely be attending that results presentation and hopefully interviewing both Craig and Robbie to get some more insight into what the strategic thinking is and what sort of shakeup we could see at management level.
Yeah, perhaps ETV should speak to these guys. You never know, there's a box ready to be used.
Well, funny enough, ETV has its own box already, OpenView HD, which also hasn't terribly successful from what I can tell. That's the free-to-air box, which includes a conditional access system. I forget which one it is. It could be Nagravision or I forget which one it is actually. Maybe the Cisco one. But they've got a box in the market already. They've tested the market. So they've been out there with an encryption system. But yeah, Ultron. The share price has taken a real hammering over the last 6 months. I haven't looked at it this morning, but it's really come off sharply, more than 50%. I think closer to 60%. Over the last little while, and I think shareholders are going to be very keen to hear what the Fenters have to say about the future strategic direction of the business.
Yeah.
Let's chat a bit about the price hikes we've seen in the last few weeks. Rachid, you with MTN, hey?
Yeah.
They announced just 2 days ago they're putting up their rates. How are you affected? Have you looked, had a chance to look at the...
I can't always remember what contract I'm on even.
Oh, right, okay. I'm but sure having MTN a look is here, very happy to have you.
No, but having a look here, I mean, there's what, a 50 Rand increase on mine. I've got an MTN 750.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's what, 50 Rand? 50 Rand topper from 750 to 800 bucks. It's not massive, but you know,
it's about
Telkom's increasing, MTN's increasing, Vodacom's increasing. I mean, petrol's going up again. It's not a fun time to be a paying customer.
No, indeed. So MTN has announced the hike. I think it's the prepaid data is going up, and a lot of their contracts. In fact, I suspect all of their contract fees are going up. Subscription fees. No changes to voice prices, and prepaid voice users are not affected. Prepaid data users are. And this comes just a week or 2 weeks after Vodacom announced that they were increasing the prices, mainly of subscriptions for contracts, also leaving prepaid voice tariffs alone. So I think even more reason to ditch the contract and go prepaid. And I think most controversially, Telkom has increased basic line rental fees by 13.8%, which is about three times the current inflation rate. And this affects everyone who has broadband.
And I just reinstalled my my telecom line moving to a new house. And, you know, I again looked at my bill, and it is ridiculous the fact you have to pay that basic line rental at that new price. I mean, you're not getting any value out of it. I don't even plug my telephone in.
Yeah.
I mean, we have had many conversations with telecom about why they do that, and then they've trying to explain to us. I mean, it's part of their, you know, that's how their business runs. And I'm sure if they do away with it, it's going to be a massive financial blow to them. But I would still much rather pay more money for my broadband or pay a premium on my broadband just to know I get a better service quality than I have to mess with basic line rental. And again, it's another bill you're reluctant to pay. Mm-hmm. It's like your TV license, right? We don't reuse it, but...
it's almost a legacy thing. I mean, who cares about fixed line voice anymore?
I guess they do. Their business does.
They do, but it's a business that's rapidly disappearing, and in 10 years won't exist.
No, exactly. I mean, I don't know anybody that still uses a landline for phone call purposes. No. Everybody that has
a landline. Big companies do, but most of them have found alternative. I mean, they use least cost routing. They put voice calls. Big corporates, they're all using VoIP.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not using telecom.
Maybe
you know, those that are have already negotiated great discounts with the company. You know. And home users, I mean, I was actually listening to Aki Anastasio and Reedy Klabi having a conversation on 702 this morning, and Reedy was going on about how she just doesn't make phone calls anymore. She just uses WhatsApp, and you know, I think that's a general sort of thing. People are moving to, never mind VoIP, they're just not making phone calls with WhatsApp and that sort of thing.
Maybe that's the operator's way of just covering some of those losses of people moving away from their voice from their voice services. Because both telecom and the mobile operators are battling with, you know, keeping their voice business active.
Yeah,
profitable at least.
Anyway, I was very surprised because I actually thought that telecom was bound to very strict price increase regulations by ICASA. They certainly were in the past. In terms of the old regulations, they were not entitled to increase the price of any one of their products or services by more than 5% above the inflation rate.
Hmm.
And the latest CPI inflation, I think, was 3.9%, which sounds amazing. I find it difficult to believe that inflation is only at 3.9%.
Hmm.
But, 13.8% is well above that and would be in breach of those ICASA regulations. So I put in a call to ICASA spokesman Paseka Maleka, and he told me that those regulations have actually fallen by the wayside. They don't exist anymore. So Telkom is in effect able to increase its prices to whatever level it wants.
Did those lapse, or did they just fall away?
Apparently they fell away with the introduction of new legislation. They've gone. All the Telkom has to do now is to, according to Paseka, is lodge the tariff with ICASA,
and 20 days before
ICASA stamps it. That's right. Yeah, they hadn't done that at the time they announced this increase, so presumably they will do it before the actual increase takes effect on the 1st of May. So I presume they've done it by now. But yeah, Telkom apparently entitled without regulatory oversight to jack up these prices, which is concerning because they still have a monopoly over the last mile in effect.
Mm.
Sure, there's some fiber to the home alternative players, but they're tiny at this stage. Vodacom and MTN are talking about fiber to the home, but haven't really started anything yet. And until that happens, I'm actually surprised that these regulations were allowed to lapse, because in effect, Telkom can push those prices up as much as it wants. I suppose in reality they can't, because it'll just lead to more greater fixed to mobile substitution, people moving to mobile alternatives.
Yeah, it gives them more reason to do so.
But I would imagine there's a great deal of flexibility for them to put those prices up quite a lot, because a lot of people are reliant on fixed line, on ADSL, especially if they push a lot of data every month.
Yeah. But I can't help but wonder if there isn't a better way to provide on a telecom system ADSL data to users, either by introducing a different pricing structure to cover that, and then do away with the line rental. But I think it's also very much about perception and people looking at Telkom and saying, but you guys are trying to rip us if we're not using some of these services, and we now have to pay more money for it.
Anyway,
let's hope fiber comes soon so we can cut out that last mile.
I wish. I'm just waiting for someone to bring in fiber.
So you guys haven't heard anything about fiber in this hood yet?
No, nothing. Nothing in my part of Joburg.
I saw Toby Shapshack.
Toby Shapshack has fiber. The
Yeah.
This string of expletives here to follow.
Did you see the screenshot? Did you see the speed test that he did this morning? 200 megs down, 70 up, I think it was.
I saw one he posted a few 2 days ago where he got 275 megabits down.
Yeah, that's the one.
Insane. He's with that Craig Hall
Fiberhoods.
Dunkel Fiberhoods. Yeah, mm-hmm. They're wiring up the Lovo area.
And I bet you he's not paying a Telkom line rental.
No. I would ditch Telkom with great speed if someone like that came along and offered me fiber.
It's coming. We can taste it.
It's coming eventually, sometime. Yeah, yeah. I just hope it happens within the next 3 years or so.
Mm.
They really are focusing though on the really posh areas of Joburg.
No, those big suburbs.
Hyde Park and the parks, they call them.
Yeah, we're just lucky that we're close enough to those parks that we'll probably find some of the spillover happening into our street. So hopefully that'll happen.
Hopefully. Touch wood. Last thing I wanted to chat about this week was the announcement by Cell C that they're going to pump 8 billion rand into building a 4G LTE network in metropolitan areas in South Africa. I think a lot of people, Cell C users, will be saying hallelujah about time.
Yeah.
It's the only network in South Africa that doesn't have a 4G network, and they're going to be rolling this out in metropolitan areas, as I mentioned. I think that makes sense. Cell C doesn't have the cash to roll out a national network. And 8 billion, it sounds like a lot of money, but actually if you think that MTN and Vodacom are each spending 10 billion rand on their networks this year alone, it's probably not that much. But it's, I think, interesting what it says about the commitment to the shareholders in this business, because Bloomberg's reported a few weeks ago that the shareholders had put the business up for sale, or rather commissioned Goldman Sachs to find out if there was any interest in anyone buying the company. Now they commit to an 8 billion rand rollout of infrastructure, suggests that if the Goldman Sachs process doesn't work out, and I assume it's still going on, then they'll put the money in the ground and commit to the market. But they are kind of blowing hot and cold on the issue. Let's appoint Goldman Sachs to see if we can sell this thing. Let's put 8 billion rands of new capital into it. You know, which one is it?
Appearances, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Look, at least the end users will benefit.
I suppose it's easy to put out a press release saying you're going to spend 8 billion rand on LTE. It's, let's actually see the commitment on the ground. Yeah,
true.
But I think something that Celsius has to do. They don't have a choice.
Yeah.
They've got problems. They've got perception problems about the quality of their network. Justified perceptions about the quality of their network, which they say they've largely addressed in Gauteng now. I don't use Celsius and I don't know anyone who does. I don't communicate regularly with anyone who does, let's put it that way.
Mm.
So I don't know if the problems have actually been fixed, but they have a lot of work to do.
There used to be a time when they really were the favorite kid in the block. I mean, they introduced some interesting pricing things when they launched.
I think that's the biggest problem, is they've taken on so many customers in the last 2-3 years that their network fell over, couldn't cope with the demand.
And now those guys are migrating back to the other guys.
I don't know yet if they're doing that, because if you look at the numbers... I think MTN has certainly stopped the hemorrhaging.
Mm.
Vodacom's market shares remained pretty flat. Cell C, until the most recent numbers I've seen, still suggests that Cell C is gaining.
That's interesting.
But those numbers are probably about 3 to 6 months out of date now. My gut feeling is that it's probably that migration to Cell C has probably stopped. But we'll have to wait to see the numbers from the operators when they get released in the next few weeks, actually. We should be seeing numbers from Vodacom and Telkom at least. Just trying to think of Blue Label Telecoms, of course, provides some analysis on this as well. But I don't think we're going to see those numbers for a few months yet. So, yeah, there we go. Cell C. Let's move on to our regular features. We're running rapidly out of time. Let's pick our... I'll do the winner this week, Richard, if you can pick up the loser.
Sure.
I think our winner this week's an easy one, and that's it's Naspers and its shareholders. For the company's share price surging through the 2,000 rand a share mark this week for the first time ever, giving it a market capitalization of over 850 billion rand, making it one of the biggest publicly traded companies in South Africa. In fact, I think it's the biggest... company only listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, biggest company without a dual listing on another exchange like London. The share has come back quite a bit since then. I think it fell the next day to 1800 and something before picking up again. But it's all on the back of Tencent.
Yeah.
It's all about Tencent, which is now worth as much as Facebook.
Wow.
Just to put it in perspective.
That is crazy.
So absolutely market cap well north of $200 billion. And Naspers owns a third of this company.
Somebody made a very clever investment move many years ago. Yeah. I hope that guy got a bonus.
I think it was Antoine Roux who passed away a couple of years ago. The guy who started MWeb in South Africa.
Oh, yes.
Remember Antoine?
Yes, yes.
He was responsible for many of these investments. He led the team, I think based in Singapore or one of those Southeast Asian markets. And he led a lot of these investments. I think he did the Mail.Roux deal as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow, yeah, that's another big one.
Another big one. Also, fabulously wealthy company now. Naspers doesn't have anywhere near a third of Mail.Roux, but it's still a valuable investment for them.
Mm.
But Antoine, yeah, he led a lot of these transactions. He died at a very young age a couple of years ago. Naspers shareholders is continuing to reap the rewards of his investments. And, of course, the visionary backing, I guess, of Chris Becker.
Oh yeah, yeah. Just shows you what a few good decisions can do. The right decisions.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Maybe get our government to employ some of those guys.
Wishful thinking. Anyway, so who's our loser?
Yeah, the loser for this week, it has to be Telkom for hiking the line rental fees. I mean, like we said, the line rental fee is a disputable part of your account every month already, and by hiking that, it's just not helping the guy that's really trying to make
best of
their
insult to injury.
Yeah, and you know, I love ADSL. I love my ADSL when it's at a decent speed, and I can't see myself going without it. Obviously, unless fiber goes.
Yes.
But yeah, it's not nice to see that from Telkom. Mm.
So go into your dog box, Telkom. Don't do it again.
Yeah, bad boy.
What's your pick this week, Richard?
So I've been when in my transition when I was moving house that I didn't have DSL installed, I didn't stream any music. I didn't want to use too much data. So I've been going through my old MP3 catalogs or my old MP3 folders again. Having been a Windows user for most of my life, I used Winamp religiously, and I still do on one of my Windows machines.
Okay.
I still own my license. Well, I still have my license on the last version before they went under. And I still love that music player. But I was looking for something similar and something similar in simplicity. For Mac OS, and I came across an app called Vox, and you can get it at Coppertino, that's copper the element, coppertino.com, and the app is called Vox. It's available for Mac and your iPhone, and it's a really nice, very simple user interface music player, and I've really been enjoying using it.
Is it freeware?
It is free. You can pay to get one or two additional features, it is free. Now you caught me. I'll have a look at those now.
Sure.
You know. But in terms of organizing your music collections, playing, syncing it up to SoundCloud or Last.fm, if you're still a Last.fm user, it's very easy. But I like the fact that, you know, it's a window that stays on the side of my screen.
Yeah.
And I can play all my MP3s through it. I still love to stream, but I've got such a big collection of MP3s that I've collected over the years. Certainly worth it.
I must say I've moved wholesale to streaming now, except in my car, because local mobile networks are so crap that you can't seem to sustain a connection for streaming music for more than 5 kilometers across the northern suburbs of Johannesburg, which
is
just ridiculous on any of the networks. You know, it works fine for a while and then it cuts out, which is just, you know, if you're in the middle of listening to Stairway to Heaven or something,
yeah,
you don't want it to cut out.
It's so killing the mood,
I tend to, yeah, exactly. I tend to still listen with my iPod plugged into my car, but
yeah, I still use my iPod as well. But
when I'm at home, I do nothing but stream, and I use radio, RDIO.
Yeah,
I listen. I've got it on my TV, on my PC, and on my phone, and I just on my iPad as well, and I just stream music all the time.
Yeah, and that is the way to go. But just one last thing about Vox, and what I really like about it, it supports FLAC. I mean, I guess a lot of music players do now, but it also seems like they are targeting the high fidelity audio listener, somebody that appreciates a really good sound quality. I will put the link up on the show notes. I can't see what the upgrade price is, but
no problem.
We'll
put the link to the app there, and you can go and have a look at that. It's Vox for Mac OS X and for iPhone, you said.
Yeah, for iOS.
No version for Windows or Android or
no. This is only for Mac. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. My pick this week is specifically an app for Windows, and it's a universal app or a metro app if you prefer, for Windows. And it's the app from FNB. The FMB banking app for Windows. And that's an unusual pick because most people just use the app on their smartphone or on their tablet. But it's actually a really good app. And the reason I've started using it, as opposed to just simply logging into fmb.co.za in my web browser, is that it's got some great share trading functionality built into it. I've always been looking for a decent website that offers decent free access to share information. And I haven't really been able to find it. ShareNet is not bad, although they expect you to pay to get into sort of levels of detail. But, you know, it doesn't have proper charting capabilities and that sort of thing. And so I've started using the FMB app for Windows, the universal app for Windows, and it's really good. And I've recently started dabbling in the share market again, so listeners, mm-hmm. be warned, there's probably a catastrophic market collapse about to happen.
Yeah, just don't invest in Aspers, please.
Given my history of investing in shares, the market is probably going to have a repeat of 1929. But it's a really cool app, and it provides a great amount of detail into allowing you to drill down into shares on their market cap, their historical performance, a whole range of multiples, including PE multiples, all the sort of things you need as an investor to decide whether you're going to buy a share or not. And I really like its graphing tools in particular, because it'll let you drill down to 5 years of graphs, and it's really well designed and well done. And the great news is you can access all of this information, all of this functionality free of charge without being an FMB customer.
No, that's great for potential investors or anybody who just wants to read a market, I guess, and kind of see what's happening. That's very cool. Yeah. Very cool.
So that's the FMB banking app available in the Windows store. It's not often we pick one of those, is it?
Yeah, definitely. Windows making a comeback.
Excellent. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. If you have any feedback on the show, we'd love to hear from you. info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from Richard and myself, take care.
Ciao, ciao.